Governor Ron DeSantis from Florida announced yesterday, he is formally announced that he is running for president of the United States. And so it begins. And it's going to be an interesting 18 months. Welcome to the program, Governor DeSantis. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Glenn. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm good. Enjoyed it. Not the first 20 minutes. That must have been incredibly frustrating for you with the technical problems, but it was the largest audience gathered on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of sitting in Tallahassee, like I didn't really know what was going on because Twitter handled all of that, and they were just getting so many people above and beyond what they've ever gotten that I think it kind of melted the servers.
Yeah.
But they were able to correct it, and we were able to do an announcement that I think, you know, obviously I laid out the case at the beginning for 5 or 6 minutes, but then we were able to talk about actual issues that people should care about. And I think it's now up to 8 or 9 million people have viewed it across some of the platforms that have featured it. And obviously when Elon's involved, you get a lot of buzz out of it. So we're getting huge feedback and raising money and doing all that, which is great.
We were talking earlier today, Stu and I, about this choice. That you have always had this approach where you don't care what the New York Times says. You're not sitting down trying to get, you know, a puff piece out of the New York Times. You know you're not going to get one, so you just ignore them. And I think that's really, really smart, but very different. This, too, I think is going to be remembered as the Clinton MTV or Arsenio Hall program. This is really smart to do. Does this... is this a sign the end of the mainstream media going right straight to people?
Well, I think what Elon's done is he's opened up Twitter. I mean, the social networks when they first came on the scene had a lot of potential because we could go around legacy media and we could converse with ourselves. And that was a big threat to them. And so they really helped lobby companies like Facebook to start censoring. And then it got to the point where not only were they trying to enforce a narrative, the tech companies were colluding with federal agencies like the FBI and the CDC to censor and stifle dissent. And so Elon, I think, has put his money where his mouth is, gotten one of those platforms and opened it up. So I think open platforms are good for conservatives because it allows us to go around the filter. But I do think we have a huge battle on our hands about tech censorship writ large. What Elon's done is great, but how many people are worth $250 billion where they could afford to just wait, you know, put $54 billion down to buy a social platform? And so tech censorship, I think, is going to continue to be an issue. I think we've not dealt with it in Florida. We're going to do more as president, of course, to make sure that the First Amendment actually means something, because you can't let the government subcontract out censorship to Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And say you still have a First Amendment.
Okay, so let me talk to you about the government, FBI, DOJ, IRS, NSA, CIA, ATF. Everything, even the Capitol Police now, are an intelligence gathering agency. How do you even run a campaign when you know the all of government approach to the last election? How do you dismantle this? Because it's almost like a unplug it and plug it back in and reset it to factory settings. I mean, it's cleaning house.
And I think that this is a fundamental problem. So we will look at like an example of weaponization, which is obviously many examples. But that's kind of the end point. Like, why are we here? And the reason that we're here is because we have these agencies that have been detached from constitutional accountability. There was never supposed to be a fourth branch of government, but Congress has not held them accountable with the power of the purse or with legislating more precisely. And presidents have not been willing to wield Article II power to discipline the bureaucracy. So I think I'll come in and on day one, we'll be spitting nails. I understand, and all your listeners should understand, that if we do everything right, if we're disciplined, if we're strong as anyone could be, it still takes a two-term project. I think it takes 8 years to be able to reconstitutionalize this government. But the question it raises is, do we govern ourselves or do we not? Because right now, the most significant issues tend not to be resolved by our elected representatives. They're done by these bureaucrats and through these agencies. And so it's really, I think, a crisis of self-government. Now, what you have with lack of accountability, you just have a consolidation of power amongst people that all have the same worldview. And so their worldview is different than our worldview, and they view people like us as factions that they want to exert power over. And so the weaponization, I think, flows from human nature. So what would I do, you know, day one? First of all, I already said new FBI director day one. That is a no-brainer. You've got to do that. I'll have an attorney general that has a backbone, an attorney general that recognizes if you are doing your job properly, you are going to be pilloried by the Washington Post and the New York Times and CNN. And so if that's not something that you're comfortable with, then don't even apply for this job. Understand you're going into the lion's den. These people do not want to give up this power willingly. And so they're going to smear you. They're going to attack you. So I think getting the personnel right, if you can't do that, then it's just not going to work at all. Second thing, I think, is you got to be willing to use Article 2 authority to its fullest extent. The idea that some FBI agent can collude with a tech company to censor like Hunter Biden, you should be firing these people. You have the authority to do it. Yes, it'll be contested. They'll sue you. But who gets the Article 2 power? The person that wins the Electoral College or some middle managing bureaucrat in the IRS or the FBI? So asserting that authority, making sure that you have political control over those agencies, that is a huge battle. It's something you got to be disciplined about. It's something you got to be strategic about. And it's not something that anyone's really tried to do because, you know, these are tough fights. I mean, right. It's like trench warfare, and you got to be ready on day one. And we will. And incidentally, who's the attorney general? Very important. But it's also important who's in, you know, a step or two below that across all these agencies. And I think you need to have thousands of people ready to go.
One of the things that really bothers me about the Republicans is the Democrats were gaming and putting everything into the Obama bill. When he walked in, that thing was 2,000 pages long. They had worked on that for years. Are you assembling teams and talking about what to do, and so you could just launch if you would win?
Absolutely. And so, first of all, we're working with allied conservative organizations who are already collecting resumes from people around the country. And I will have a message if I'm in, you know, if I'm in Nevada, I'm going to say, look, some of you who are in this audience, you may need to pick up your family and move to Washington, D.C. for 2, 4, 6 years, because you can't just recycle everybody from D.C.
No.
It's not going to change if that's the case. And so you really need to have most of these people descending on D.C. From outside the country. What we're also going to do is I'll issue a directive to all these agencies that they need to reduce the footprint of their agencies in D.C. by at least 50%.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I think what's happened is, you know, the growth, the government, the size of it is one thing, of course, but the consolidation of it in Washington, I think, has been totally toxic. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a place in Washington, D.C., it votes 95% Democrat. I think Trump got 4 or 5% of the vote in 2020. And so this is totally not representative of the public as a whole. And I think the founders would look at that, and I think they would see, like, that is a huge, huge problem. So dispersing power out of D.C., yes, reducing the government overall, but whatever government you have, we want less consolidation in D.C., and I think that will make a difference.
So, Governor, the one thing that Donald Trump will have going for him in spades is the economy. People will trust him on the economy. He's already done it once. He's known as a businessman. What are you bringing to the table to this all-out war on the American dream? Corporations have been weaponized, red tape, all of the stuff that's going on. You'll have the Fed against you, the big banks. How do you change the economy?
Well, look, I would just say push back a little bit. I mean, I think he did great for 3 years, but when he turned the country over to Fauci in March of 2020, that destroyed millions of people's lives. And in Florida, we were one of the few that stood up, cut against the grain, took incoming fire from media, bureaucracy, the left, even a lot of Republicans, had schools open, preserved businesses. And so Florida, since COVID, has outperformed virtually any state in the country when you look at all these significant metrics. I mean, we're booming. We've got people moving in here. Wealth is coming in here. And so I think when people look back, you know, that 2020 year was not a good year for the country as a whole. It was a situation where Florida started to stand alone. So I think that that's important contrast. Now, going forward, yes, you rip up what Biden's done on day one with things like energy. They are trying to price middle-class people out of having a middle-class standard of living. We're not going to force people to buy electric vehicles. We're going to make sure that people have a choice to have affordable transportation. We absolutely reduce federal spending. We're going to fight with the Congress on that. I mean, I think the debt has gone up under both Republican and Democrat. I mean, we act like it's just Biden, you know, went up $8 trillion, the debt under Trump as well. And so we've got to stop doing that. That has absolutely driven the inflation since March of 2020 with all the borrowing and spending. I also think we need to have the Federal Reserve focus on stable money and stop trying to be the economic central planner. You look at how much money they've printed since COVID, of course you're going to get inflation when that happens. So you need a major overhaul with the Federal Reserve. And then, fighting woke capital. Woke capital is absolutely bad for the average American because they're pursuing an ideological agenda to achieve ideological left-wing goals that are going to make it harder for the average American family to make ends meet.
May I ask you a question? First of all, we are doing sit-downs with each candidate. You've already done one, but as governor, not as a candidate. Will you sit down and just talk about your policies with me?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Would you be for a debate or a roundtable hosted by, for instance, us that would not necessarily get the backing of the Republicans? I think the Republican Party controls these debates so much that we keep going back to the mainstream media. And I don't understand why.
You guys should absolutely do a debate, and the RNC should sanction it. I mean, here's the thing, Glenn, with corporate media. Some will say, because I say they shouldn't be involved in our process because they're hostile to us as Republicans. Mm-hmm. They have a partisan agenda, which is fine. It's a free country. And people say, oh, well, you just don't want them to ask Republicans tough questions. No, their gotcha questions are not tough questions. Their questions are designed to further a narrative.
Correct.
Their questions, though, are not illuminating to Republican primary
Correct.
Voters because
Correct.
They're not one of us. And so when you have people who live in kind of our world, you are going to be asking the tougher questions. They're not going to be gotcha questions, but they're going to be substantive, and they're going to require candidates to actually go beneath a talking point to talk about their vision for the country on these various issues. And so I think you guys should do it. You know, I'd love to be a part of it, but I absolutely think the RNC should sanction it because you've seen what happened in 2015 or 16 with some of those debates. It was a mockery what these legacy media outs were doing. And their whole goal is to try to make the Republican candidates look as ridiculous as possible.
Right.
They do not want us to look like, you know, we're serious people. They want to be able to plow the field to get Biden reelected. So we know that that's their agenda. So why would you want to give them a platform to be able to be involved in our process? I can tell you in Florida, we had four congressional seats that were open seats. Republicans ended up winning, and there were primaries in all of them. We sanctioned debates with the state party, and we had conservative journalists and moderators doing debates. And guess what? They were great, substantive debates, and the issues that people actually care about in our party were discussed.
Well, I will tell you that as we took a stand for Harmeet Dhillon, we didn't make any friends at the GOP national level. But thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the rollout yesterday. We look forward to hearing more from you, and all the best.
Now, we'll definitely sit down with you, and I'd love for all your folks out there, invest with us at rondesantis.com. We'd love to have your support. I pledge, you nominate me, we will win, we'll go in on day one, and we'll get all this done.
Very good. Thank you very much, Governor.